This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, the Zaleka refugee camp in Cameroon is experiencing difficulties. Residents of a Johannesburg township have destroyed shacks of foreign nationals they accuse of being criminals. And Nigeria's President Tinubu Bola appoints 6 new service chiefs. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Residents of Diepsloot Township in Johannesburg have gone on a rampage, burning and destroying shacks belonging to foreign nationals they accuse of being criminals. These follows a string of killings in the area, which local residents accuse foreign nationals of committing. Residents called on President Cyril Ramaphosa to personally address the volatile situation and threatened to cause more damage. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The burning and destruction of shacks belonging to foreign nationals was triggered by the killing of community policing leader John Makule. He was fatally shot after responding to a robbery in which a shop owner was shot on the arm. His killing came shortly after several murders and robberies in the area, including a hold-up in which a woman was hit with a hammer on the head and her 15-year-old shot in the stomach. Hundreds of angry residents marched last night to protest the killings, accusing immigrants of committing the crimes and began destroying homes of those they accused of being part of the crime syndicates. The attacks continued today. Community leader Lois Otoyia told VOA that residents were forced to take the law into their hands because police had failed them.
We're not xenophobic in South Africa. It is a fact that the majority of crimes that are committed in our community, it is illegal foreigners, to be specific, from Zimbabwe. We cannot call such people our brothers.
Gauteng Province Police Commissioner Elias Mawela explained why police were struggling to deal with crime in the area.
Undocumented people that came in numbers, that area, it is not accessible. That's why we had a lot of problem. And we have another area called Extension 1. That Extension 1 is this dark. Even when you walk during the night, you know, you have to stretch your hand to get somebody close to you.
He urged the community not to take the law into their own hands, but report all criminals to the police. In 2021, foreign nationals living in the area temporarily fled after locals burned alive Zimbabwean national Elvis Nyati, accusing him of committing crime. Subsequently, dozens of police and immigration officers were deployed to the area to deal with crime and illegal immigration. But residents say things have gotten worse. Community leaders told the media Wednesday evening that the protests have been suspended after a meeting with the presidency where they've been assured that ministers will come down to address them. South Africa has one of the world's highest crime rates. It also has seen waves of anti-foreign violence in the past several years, in part as the economy has weakened and unemployment has risen to more than 30%. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
Migrants from conflict zones in Ethiopia and Sudan recently talked about their journeys to Tunisia, their frustration and disappointments, and why they do not want to stay in the country. Reporter Elysia Volkman has more from Tunis.
Tunisia has become a major destination for people fleeing conflicts. They come hoping for asylum, but many end up homeless and struggle here for years. Thousands of others are economic migrants hoping for better opportunities. Across from a coffee shop in the Lac district of Tunis is a building under construction, mostly filled by Sudanese men who are chatting away while work carries on. The upstairs looks like a dormitory with bedding and bags of personal property. 17-year-old Anas is one of those who fled Sudan. His radiant smile hides his pain. Anas says he left Sudan 5 years ago. His father was in the army and was killed. He left for Libya when he was just 12 years old and worked at a gas station. When he was 14, he tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea, but the Coast Guard caught the boat and they were jailed. The prison was packed full of people from all over Africa. 6 weeks later, they broke down a wall and escaped. He says he registered as an asylum seeker at the Tripoli UNHCR office, but they never found a solution for him. So he's missed out in school, and after his mother died, he is all alone in the world. He says he prays all the time, and he gets strength from God. Mohammed also lives in this building. The 26-year-old wears donated clothes, but he styled them to follow the latest fashions. He sports a stylish haircut, not surprising given that he's a professional barber, but he has much bigger dreams. He says he left Sudan 5 years ago because of the fighting. Mohammed says he stayed in Egypt for 2 years working as a barber, but he didn't like it. From there, he has lived in Morocco, Algeria, and Libya before coming to Tunisia. Now he wants to go to Europe, but he doesn't want to be a barber or a hairdresser there. He really wants to be an astronaut and fly people into space. That is his dream job. The European Union earlier this month offered Tunis over $100 million in aid to help bolster its border control system after more than 17,000 migrants tried to sail across the Mediterranean to reach Europe. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Falkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, for the first time scaled back yesterday's commemoration of World Refugee Day in Malawi after refugees called out the tough living conditions there. Malawian authorities have been forcibly relocating refugees into the Zaleka refugee camp, where refugees say there is inadequate shelter, food and clean water. Now, McMasina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
In Malawi, in previous years, the day typically was commemorated by holding a special event with activities like dance presentations, displays from refugees, and speeches from government and UN officials. The theme for this year's commemoration is Hope Away From Home. It comes at a time, however, when the Malawi government is forcibly relocating refugees who stay outside Zaleka, the country's only refugee camp. UNHCR and civil rights advocates, including Human Rights Watch, have requested that the government halt the forced relocations after refugees complained of the dehumanizing manner in which they were being evicted from their homes and businesses. Nibigira Goreth is the leader of refugees from Burundi at the Zaleka refugee camp, and she told VOA the refugees' community leaders have agreed that holding an event to commemorate the World Refugee Day in Malawi would be an insult to refugees.
The situation now is bad. We don't have enough water. People are lacking water for everything because, you know, water is life. Many of us don't have the way to sleep, don't have food. And now for those children who are going to school, we don't have hope that those children will go to school this coming year because we don't have enough classroom.
Goreth says this year's theme for the World Refugee Day, Hope Away From Home, does not resonate amid the congestion at the refugee camp and harsh conditions refugees are facing in Malawi. The Malawi government has so far forcibly relocated nearly 2,000 refugees to the overcrowded camp that hosts upwards of about 50,000 refugees against a recommended capacity of 12,000 people. 6,000 more are targeted for relocation. Hilda Kausiwa is a senior administration and operations officer for Department of Refugees in Malawi. She says the relocation exercise is in line with Malawi's legislation, which prohibits refugees from staying outside the refugee camp. Kausiwa says it is wrong to say that refugees have no hope in Malawi.
Malawi has always been open to protecting and assisting refugees, but it can only do that in accordance with the existing laws. So if others feel that there is no hope, everyone has a choice to seek asylum where they desire, then they have a power to actually decide. We are providing options for voluntary repatriations where the government will assist anyone who wants to leave. Then they can always do so and seek it elsewhere.
Kenyi Emmanuel Rukajo, the Associate External Relations and Reporting Officer for UNHCR in Malawi, says they observed the day in a low-key way in respect of the decisions made by refugees.
I can say it's a regret, but also it's the best way to do it, given the position of the refugee community leaders. The position is we are not doing this. It's something that they feel is the right thing to do. We cannot impose that this should happen, but it's their decision. And also it's being accountable to the affected people, because we cannot do anything without their participation.
In a statement on the commemoration of the World Refugee Day released Tuesday, UNHCR says the day was commemorated in a world that often prevents refugees from accessing services and jobs they need to be self-reliant. The UN's refugee agency says no matter how long refugees remain in exile, they want to carry on with their lives. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Rights groups and officials in Cameroon are distributing birth certificates to 30,000 of several million children denied education for lack of document. A majority of the children without birth registration are from western regions and Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, where separatist and Boko Haram conflicts have displaced several million people. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The Cameroon government says thousands of children have been visiting district councils all over the country this week to collect their birth certificates. As part of activities marking the International Day of the African Child on June 16, about 30,000 birth certificates are being established and distributed, the government said Thursday. Among the children expecting the Yaoundé City Council to establish their birth certificates is 17-year-old Mustafa Issa. Mustafa says he is one of the several thousand children denied an education for lack of a birth certificate. Mustafa says he went to the Yaoundé City Council on Thursday and pleaded with the mayor to help him alongside other children who have not received an education because they lack birth certificates. He says the mothers of some of the children yearning for an education gave birth to their children at home and failed to register their births. Officials of the Yaoundé City Council say they received at least a dozen humanitarian groups asking for birth certificates to be issued for children so they can obtain an education, health care, and other government services. The Ministry of Decentralization and Local Development is supervising the establishment and distribution of birth certificates to needy children. The document is free for babies less than 90 days old, but children above that age have to spend about $20 to have birth certificates in a long process that involves officials of Cameroon's Justice Ministry. Cameroon's Ministry of Secondary Education says it is compulsory for children to present their birth certificates before continuing with their education after the primary level. Mustafa said dropouts become street children, drug addicts, and gangsters. The Cameroon government says several thousand birth certificates were lost or destroyed on Cameroon's separatist conflict that so far has displaced 750,000 people in English-speaking western regions, most of them women and children. Tanjong Martin, mayor of the Tubac district in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region, says the number of applications for birth certificates is overwhelming.
During this time of the Young Phone crisis, schools were not functioning, cancers were not running, and the children for these years have no birth certificate. Now we have about 3,000 applications, and as you know, new ones are coming up. So it's a big problem with the areas where this crisis hit since 2016.
Cameroon also says tens of thousands of birth certificates were lost in attacks by Boko Haram militants that have displaced more than 3 million people in northern Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria. George Elanga Obam, Cameroon's Minister of Decentralization, says Cameroon is working in partnership with Nigeria for displaced children to have birth certificates.
With Boko Haram, a lot of people came from Nigeria. Most of the children do not have their birth certificates. The first thing we do as a state is education, talking to parents with all the means that we can use, talking to the civil society. It is very important to be registered in civil status. We will reduce the amount of children not having birth certificates.
Cameroon says more 3.3 million children in the country of 26 million do not have required birth certificates. More than 2 million are of school-going age, the government says. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A specialist in African politics says the appointment of six new service chiefs will bring refresh Nigeria's war against insurgency and crime. President Bola Tinubu approved the appointments. He says it's natural for a new president to select people who will support his vision. Tunde Babawale is a professor of African politics at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye saying the profiles of the appointees show they have good performance records.
My reaction to the appointment of a new service chief by President Bola Tinubu is that of relief. And because it promises a breath of fresh air in the war against insurgency and other acts of criminality. We have, over the years, been saddled with a situation where people stay too long in office, even when there is no evidence of performance. However, I think it is natural that if a president assumes office, he gets a call of people to support his vision and help him actualize that vision. I think to that extent, the appointment of the new service chiefs is legitimate, is in order. And there is also a need for us to be able to rev into higher gear in the war against insurgency and other acts of crime in Nigeria. So for me, it's a welcome development. It should be applauded. The profiles of each of these appointees is very impressive. And I show that they have a track record of performance in areas where they have served before. And for that, they promise that they are going to deliver. I mean, if we go by their track record, there is no question about the fact that we are set to witness some positive change in the war against insurgency in Nigeria.
While the shake-up of the security chiefs is a normal thing with changing governments,
yes.
Is it from the same party as Buhari?
Don't forget that even when an incumbent president feels he needs fresh hands, he's at liberty to secure the services of those fresh hands. So regardless of whether you belong to the same party, as I said, you will still have a vision that is unique to you. You have a strategy that you intend to pursue in government as a leader. And for you to be able to do that effectively, you need a set of people that will key into that vision. It has to be widespread because the battle that we are fighting in Nigeria against insurgency, against banditry, against all manner of criminality should be a consolidated and harmonized one. It should not be one that would mean that different arms of the military will be acting in at cross purposes with each other. I think appointing them across the board provides an opportunity to have a coordinated approach to the issue of security and for them to act collectively Don't forget that in the recent past, one of the allegations people have leveled against those who command the security architecture is that they've been fired, they've been working in some cases at cross purposes. The agencies do not align their vision and strategy, they do not share intelligence. So we believe that this will provide an opportunity for that to be done. And in any case, there is nothing wrong in bringing in fresh ideas into a situation where you have been doing the same thing over the years. I am not saying, please, that the past service chief did not do their best, but we can get hands that can do better. That's the reason why I think this decision was taken. And this is the reason why we should commend that decision.
That was Tunde Babawale, a professor of African politics, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye by phone from Lagos, Nigeria. In Mali, animosity towards the United Nations MINUSMA troops is growing after the government called for their departure. However, some security experts are concerned that a rapid withdrawal would lead to more regional instability and attacks by militants. We have reporter Eliza Volkman again from Tunis.
Mali's military government has denounced the United Nations peacekeeping mission known as MINUSMA, or the Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, as a failure. Government said the 10-year-old mission has failed to meet security challenges. MINUSMA's mandate expires on June 30th this year, and Mali's government has demanded that the 15,000 troops depart. However, there are concerns that a rapid withdrawal could risk a rise in violent extremism, especially in the northern cities of Gao and Timbuktu. This is not the first time foreign troops have been called to withdraw. Last year, French troops pulled out. Many analysts have said that Mali is turning away from the West and international community and views Russia as a more reliable security partner in the fight against militants. Andrew Lebovich, a research fellow at the Sahel program at the Klingendael Institute in the Netherlands, explains the background for people's growing frustrations with MINUSMA.
There is somewhat of a similar political narrative to what led to the French withdrawal, particularly an emphasis on sovereignty, on trying to really push international actors out of Mali, and really an insistence on Malian sovereignty not being limited by these actors, or Mali not being judged by external forces, whether France or the UN.
Lebovich says tensions between the military government led by Colonel Assimi Goïta and MINUSMA have been brewing for some time, with the government forces trying to limit the UN troops' activities.
The transitional government, of course, has expressed skepticism about MINUSMA operations, have tried to restrict their overflights and reconnaissance gathering, intelligence gathering, and have also, of course, really severely tried to restrict their human rights monitoring, and quite vigorously protested, particularly after the recent release of the report on the massacre of civilians at Mora in central Mali, which was really kind of the last piece in breaking this relationship between Mali and MINUSMA.
The UN Human Rights Office last month said Malian and foreign troops killed 500 civilians in Mora last year. Mali's government vehemently denies these claims, saying those killed were terrorists. Mali's public prosecutor's terrorism and transnational crime unit said yesterday the government had filed a complaint against members of MINUSMA. Lebovich says that MINUSMA's impending withdrawal could risk greater insecurity.
Negative implications along the border, or increased implications along the border with Niger, with Algeria, potentially even with Mauritania. And then it can also help continue this process of creating space for jihadist groups in the country, which has already had a really significant impact on the region and on neighboring states over the past several years.
The military has led Mali's government since 2020, but on Sunday it held a referendum on a new constitution to transition towards a civilian administration. However, Lebovich says if insecurity rises, that could make a transition to democracy harder. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Elysia Volkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul Rahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.